Good morning, Cal.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Daily.
Happy to be here.
So one of the largest impacts of the extradition bill, if it were to go through, questioned whether it might undermine the one country, two systems rule, the system that governed Hong Kong since the territory gained independence from the British government in 97 was the case. But with the pro-democracy protests occurring in the territory for the better part of half a year, what do you believe would be a long-term solution?
Wow, long-term solution. I think that's a million-dollar question right now.
Right.
it's very complex, and you know, least of all, you know, from a legal perspective, there's so much at stake right now. There's economical, obviously political, as mentioned, but also socially as well. So, you know. The best long-term solution from somebody who's been living in Hong Kong for 7 years would be to leave Hong Kong as it is. There's, you know, Hong Kong, despite what you may hear from protesters from the mainland side, has never asked for independence. It's simply the people of Hong Kong are simply asking for the autonomy that was promised to it at the handover. In 1997, as you mentioned.
100%. And just following those local elections, could you paint a bit of a picture of, like, for people who may have not been up to date with that, what happened over that course? Could you, yeah, provide a little snapshot? Yeah.
The recent elections. Yeah, so, I mean, it's important to understand the local district council elections are largely toothless, right? Even quite like a local council election that you would have, you know, in New South Wales. It really is districts. So within one suburb, for example, there may be 15 different councillors, and the decisions that they make are largely around, you know, parks and recreation and you know, street signs, you know, really, really toothless sort of things. But it was really symbolic for the people of Hong Kong because, you know, in over the last 6-7 months, I guess you could call them Chinese propaganda, they call them Chinese media, but they're really essentially propaganda. They've been saying there's a silent majority in Hong Kong who actually don't support the protests. And you know, what these elections demonstrated to the world was, well, no, there is no silent majority. Because 75% of the enrolled electorate voted for what they call yellow candidates or yellow ribbon candidates, and these are the pro democracy guys. So you know, that was really revealing to not only the world but also to the Chinese leadership. So nobody can confirm this for sure, but following those elections. The Chinese government at the very highest levels kind of woke up to the fact that what they've been told by their minions underneath, and you have to imagine this, but between the top leadership and their representatives in Hong Kong, there are about, you know, five or six or maybe more layers, and the information they were the very top were receiving was heavily filtered, and they thought everything was good. And then all of a sudden, this landslide victory to basically pro-democracy candidates. And that was the last thing that they were expecting.
Going back to the elections and the propaganda that was being sort of infiltrated across the nation in the lead up to that, how might the propaganda that they use there in Hong Kong, how is that sort of different to what we might see in a more Western styled like election campaign? Could you illustrate some of the differences?
Yeah, I guess that's a big question now, given the current climate, international climate. But you know, the Chinese media, and this is very pertinent to even Australia, because a lot of the Chinese community in Australia are getting direct feeds from CCTV, which is I know it stands for closed circuit TV, but also means Chinese. I can't remember the second C, But it's Chinese TV, which is the state-run TV channel. So everything that gets pushed out on those so-called media sites or these news sites is actually directly from the Chinese government. Having said that, you know, I think the world likes to imagine China as this giant beast of an institution, but within the Chinese Communist Party or within the Chinese government, there are many little factions. So what we've seen in Hong Kong is that, you know, you've got China Daily, which is the main news site, and Global Times, which is the second one. They've been pushing out messages which probably haven't been in line with what the Chinese leadership would ideally want to come out. So I mentioned it before, but you know they spoke about how Hong Kong people were pushing for independence, and you've seen that play out in international protests from international protesters who are in favour of the Chinese government. They're always saying, "Oh, but these Hong Kongers." Want independence, you know, Hong Kongers are spoiled children, you know, and it's just plainly untrue. There are five demands that the protesters have asked for, and none of them relate to independence at all. So, you know, there's no call for this breakaway of Hong Kong from the Chinese mainland government or nation at all.
There is definitely like a cultural disconnect between Hong Kong and mainland China, but one of the other impacts is also like the fact that Hong Kong might have experienced a significant economic downturn since these protests have begun. And so I'm curious to ask you about what are some of the challenges that Hong Kong has faced in terms of their economy since all of these protests have been taking place for the past 6 months or so?
Yeah, sure. So Hong Kong's in a recession. It's in, you know, the first quarter of a recession, and yes, it you know, no doubt that has been affected by the protests. But you have to understand, you know, Hong Kong's economy is based on property taxes. So you know, unlike other economies where a large chunk might come from tourism, for example, it's simply not the case in Hong Kong. Retail figures are down because there's a large dependency on Chinese tourists coming across the border to spend their money in Hong Kong shops. But you know, it's in line with a downturn in the Chinese economy as well. There is. I guess a financial kickback, a financial backlash to this. But how much of it is really because of these protests is kind of questionable. I mean, you'd have to really look into the numbers to see, well, why is Hong Kong in a recession, and is it really attributed to the protests?
Or is it part of a larger problem?
Yeah, I think so. I think most people will know that China's GDP growth has slowed down significantly over the last 2 years. I think it's down to under 6% now, predicted growth, which is, you know, in the grand scale of things, it's still pretty good globally, but it's no longer the two-digit figures that it was, you know, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's completely linked. Also, you know, while we're talking about the economy and trade, a lot of people will say, well, Hong Kong's no longer relevant to the Chinese economy. I think it represents something like 2.7% of the total of China's GDP. What many people don't realize is that Hong Kong is still a launchpad for a foreign direct investment into China. You could say it only represents 2.7%. Of the Chinese economy, but as an enabler of investment into China, Hong Kong still represents something like 20% of direct services trade with China. Compare that to the US, which only has 17% of that share. So, Hong Kong is still significant as far as China is concerned.
For sure. Thank you so much for your time this morning, Cal.
No problems.
100%.